Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast with your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of the Mill Creek View newspaper.
Welcome to the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast. We are focusing on the volunteer state and our nation today with always an interesting person making a positive change in our community, this time special guest Pamela Furr. But first, for more information about the Mill Creek View podcast, visit us anywhere you get your podcasts and socials at Mill Creek View, Tennessee. While you're there, please subscribe. And welcome to our People in News episode, where I interview people who are making an impact and are lovers of truth. Today, we are talking with Pamela Furr. In November of last year, it was announced veteran radio broadcaster Pamela Furr was joining KWAM as a freelance news anchor. Furr anchors the morning drive news during Wake Up Memphis with Ben Dieter. Pam is one of the top radio broadcasters in the country, and we're honored to introduce her to the Mid-South, said KWAM owner Todd Stearns. It's part of our commitment to bring real journalism back to talk radio in Memphis. She spent the last 8 years as afternoon anchor for Supertalk 99.7 WTN in Nashville and is frequently heard there guest hosting for various shows on the station. Her reports can also be heard on Westwood One's America in the Morning. Originally from North Carolina, Pamela has been in the radio business for 35 plus years, working for various radio stations around the country, including Huntsville, Greensboro, and Atlanta. She's also worked as a news anchor for Glenn Beck's Blaze Radio Network, has freelanced for Fox News Radio, ABC News Radio, and Nancy Grace's Crime Stories podcast, and has been an assignment editor for News 4 WSMV-TV in Nashville. Pamela's career also has a musical side. She's a Dove-nominated Christian songwriter and can be heard singing background vocals on several country albums, and every once in a while, she sings the national anthem at various political and sports events. Serves as the president of the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame. Hello, Ms. Furr. How are you?
I'm fine. It's with all that you said, I feel kind of old right now.
Well, wise and very knowledgeable. So I'm excited to have this conversation with you. You know more about radio than I ever will. I read somewhere your grandfather was a big influence on your life. What would you want to tell us about him and your relationship?
I don't know what you're talking about.
You don't? Okay.
I don't. Now, I have two grandfathers that were very dear to me, but I'm not sure I said anywhere where they were, any one of them were a great influence on me at all.
The article had said, if, and we don't have to dwell on it, but he had, you had said something to the effect that if you had one person that you could curl up next to and listen to, it would be your grandfather. Just
of course. Yeah. Grandfather stories. I have memories of sitting on the front porch with my grandpa watching trains go by. So, but that was many, many moons ago. I will tell you though, now here's an interesting story that doesn't happen to a lot of people. On my mother's side, my grandparents were wonderful, wonderful people. They were married. My grandmother was 14. My dad was 16. Grandfather was 16 when they got married, and were together until they were 80 and 82. And my grandfather ended up with lung cancer. 6 months into it, he decided not to do chemo because he was 82 years old. He's like, forget it. I've lived a great life. But 6 months into it, he passed away. And my grandmother died at the funeral.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So that is a true story that at first, you know, there was a lot of chaos at the church because we hadn't even buried my grandfather yet. So there's a lot of chaos that day. And I have lots of aunts and uncles and cousins. My mother is one of 13 children, you know, and then they've all married and had children. So just a huge, huge church. But yeah, it was a little bit of chaos. And then we buried my grandfather and then went back to the family home. And that's when it all just kind of hit us that my grandmother died. So we had to do a funeral, another one like 4 days later.
Oh my goodness.
I was a junior in high school.
Junior in high school. And that's a pretty big family. You didn't go that route, not to pry, but I know you're married happily.
I am not married.
Oh, you're not? Oh, no. Gosh, my notes are completely off. I could have swore you were married.
All no, right. Not married. No, not haven't been married. People probably think, oh, what's wrong with her? I say, you know, at least I don't have three divorces or, you know, anything like that on my record. No, not married.
Okay. Well, married to the job, that's for sure. Maybe I'm wrong here too, but I also saw that Kathy Martindale and Devin O'Day were mentors of yours.
Yes,
Is that
that is
accurate?
very
Okay.
true. You got that one right. Yes,
Okay.
sir. Very much so.
What did they mean to you?
Well, you know, I moved to Nashville when I was young, many moons ago, in the early 90s. And these were two women that were already on the air here in Nashville. You know, one thing that people don't think of probably in 2023, but there weren't a lot of women on radio. And if they were, you didn't have any females back to back to back to back. In fact, it was frowned on to have, you know, two DJs that were women on, you know, after each other, their time slots. So anyway, there weren't a lot of women on. And so when I moved to town, music and radio, that's what I did. That's what I loved. And so I picked up the phone and just called these two ladies and asked if I could talk to them and sit down with them and pick their brain about how they got into the business here. I'd already been in radio for a while, but I was a newbie. I was all of 20, 21 years old. I was young. So they both were just so kind to this new person that had just moved to Nashville and let me sit down and pick their brains. And we've been friends ever since. So yeah, very much mentors. And I've had the pleasure of working with Kathy Martindale at WSM FM years ago. And then I've had the pleasure of, well, this year I get to induct Devin O'Day into the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame this year. So
oh, that's,
I'm very, very happy about that.
That's the circle of life. That's fantastic.
Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
So now you've got me very insecure about my notes. I'm known for being thorough in my brief career here. So if I say anything else wrong, please just say, no, you got the wrong city or whatever.
No
but
worries.
What I did have here was you were born in Fayetteville, North Carolina.
Correct.
Grew up in Southern Pinehurst area.
Correct.
Left North Carolina when you were just shy of 20 to come to Tennessee, first to Oak Ridge, where
yes,
the Oak Ridge boys are from, and then to Nashville.
Yes.
Did growing up in North Carolina prepare you for that road ahead?
Well, I mean, prepare me. The only thing I did in North Carolina was go to school. You know, I mean, I grew up, went to elementary school, then high school and whatever, what have you. So did it prepare me? I mean, I was 21. I packed up my bags and moved to Tennessee to pursue my dreams. So I guess it did.
Okay.
I would say my parents prepared me for being just to follow those dreams and maybe have the guts. Again, I didn't have a job when I moved here. I had a radio job in Oak Ridge. And I quit that job and moved here, not knowing what I was going to do. So it was an adventure, and
mm-hmm.
I loved it. Yeah.
Maybe more of the Americana, the grassroots. You know, I'm from California, moved to Washington State, not exactly where you would think of as a conservative bastion of America, at least not since the 70s when I was a pup. Did North Carolina have an influence on you in your latter day adult life is what I'm getting at. Maybe a conservative streak in you or
well,
something.
I mean, so I grew up in a Christian home. My father was a Democrat, but he was a Southern Democrat. So Southern Democrats are known to be very conservative people. And so he would always lean towards voting for the more conservative candidate, even if that candidate had a D to their name, they were still more on the conservative side, I would say. But that was years ago. I mean, he votes Republican most these days anyway. But I, you know, I grew up in a Christian school that was very involved in conservative movements. You know, they encouraged kids to get involved in the process, and they made sure you registered to vote when you were able to register to vote. And we would go to the state capitol in North Carolina, which is Raleigh, all the time, and just, you know, learn things just by being there, by osmosis, if you will. So I mean, I don't know that being in North Carolina paid that for me, but being in a strong conservative Christian schools certainly prepared me for what later ended up being my career in conservative talk.
Gotcha. I asked that question because the punishment in North Carolina for distributing what's defined in state law as obscene literature or performances could be higher when done in a child's presence in legislation that the state Senate approved unanimously last week. Tennessee did that and Governor Lee signed it, but Lizzo brought drag queens on stage at Bridgestone at an all ages event just 2 weeks ago. Think that she should be fined or jailed like Jim Morrison was in the 70s and sentenced to 6 months in prison and a $500 fine or anything like that? Do you,
Lizzo? I mean, why would she be fined? She didn't break the law. The law isn't that you can't have drag shows here in Tennessee. The law isn't that you can't have drag performances here in Tennessee. The law is you can't have obscene drag performances. Now, that's not specifically what it says. I think it's cabaret, I think it was the language in the law. But so why would she be involved? Why should she be arrested? From what I saw on stage, those drag queens weren't being obscene. They were just dancing. So
yeah, just getting clarity from your perspective. So because it wasn't obscene, like we've seen in some videos, maybe in smaller shows where the nail will do things. But yeah, that particular performance from what you saw didn't look like it broke the rules.
No, I mean, it wasn't. Okay. So why that's what people, I think, have gotten wrong about that whole legislation is that it's not about being a drag queen. It's about being obscene in front of children, mm-hmm. you know, or in public spaces. It's not. So drag performances on just say drag performances aren't obscene by nature. They can be, but just a drag queen performance is not necessarily obscene.
So the all ages aspect, not an issue. No. Okay.
I mean, just, you know, if you then you decide to do something obscene and you've got a 5 year old there and you as a drag queen decide to. Now, this is, I'm assuming, a family friendly podcast, but if you decide to put, you know, a sexual organ on your body and do awful things to it, that's obscene. You can't do that. So you can't do that in front of kids. So that's the difference. And so that's, again, I think that's where a lot of people have taken this whole law thing out of context. You ask Jack Johnson, he'll tell you the same thing. It's not, Lizzo can have as many drag queens as she wants on her stage. So can Madonna. So can Kacey Musgraves, whoever. Have at it. And 10-year-olds can be in the audience. But the second that it becomes obscene and sexually explicit, then you have a problem.
Gotcha. Okay. So you did a year in Atlanta with WYAY. Did you like that market or Nashville better?
I liked or love Nashville better. Atlanta was interesting. For me personally, I'd never felt quite at home. I loved that I was there because from a radio standpoint, you're in a top five market. So, you know, that from a radio standpoint, I got to say I've been there and can mark that off my resume. But I never quite fit in there. I don't know why. And so when I saw they were producing the show Nashville, the TV show, and when I saw some of those aerial shots of, you know, Old Hickory Boulevard and Brentwood and just some of the aerial beautiful shots, it made me very homesick for Middle Tennessee. So when my contract was up and, you know, we had a few little disagreements, I thought, you know, I think it's time to go home. And that meant Middle Tennessee. So I did. It felt very much like it did when I first moved to Nashville when I was 21. I didn't have a gig here yet. And I decided it's time to come back. So I packed up everything I had, moved back, and then started freelancing. And that's when I started freelancing for The Blaze and for Glenn Beck and that kind of thing. But yeah,
I think that show may be one of the number one Chamber of Commerce public relations coups of all time. There are 80,000 people moved to Tennessee in the last 12 months, which is a record for the state. And I really think probably 40 plus of them saw Nashville and said, I think Nashville looks pretty cool.
Yeah, maybe so. I think obviously when the show was on, you know, that could account for a lot of it. Nashville, Tennessee became the it city. But I knew it was the it city 30 years ago. So yeah. I was ready to come back.
Yeah. 30 years ago might have been Dallas, would have been the show that drew everybody into Texas. Did you have radio heroes or personalities in talk that inspired you early on? I know we talked about your two mentors, but did you listen to Rush Limbaugh or something like that?
So this is going to sound funny, but I didn't discover Rush Limbaugh really until he used to do a TV show.
Yeah.
And so he had a TV show on at night, and I stumbled onto that just by happenstance, right? However many years ago that was. I used to listen in the middle of the night. I loved just radio. I mean, I've been in radio my entire life, right? So since I was 14, I don't want to age myself, but since I was 14 years old. And so I would listen in the middle of the night just to radio. And I would hear, I would hear WSM in Nashville because that's on 650 AM, so you could pick it up. But I would also hear WLW. I would hear WLS in Chicago. And I listened to Larry King on the radio, right? Which, so that was interesting to me, just the whole radio thing. But I didn't get really, truly turned on to it until I was here in Nashville. I was scrolling the dial, and I was working at a satellite network for Southern gospel music. I mean, Christian music is also my background. So I was driving down the highway one day, scrolling through and flipping through the radio channels, and I come across this station called WTN, and Daryl and Carlo was, and I don't know how long you've been in the Middle Tennessee area, but Daryl and Carlo was on the air on WTN doing a morning show and talking about important issues. And he was funny at it at the same time. And I said right then and there, that's where I want to go. That's where I want to be. I want to be his producer. And so I set out to do that. I've never produced a show in my life. So that's what I set out to do. So I got a job. At the time, WTN was owned by Gaylord Entertainment. And so they owned WTN, WSM AM, and WSM FM, three stations, and they were all housed out there at where the Opryland Hotel is. And so I got a job as a part-time DJ on WSM AM and FM, right? I would work on the weekends, and my sole goal, though, was to get my foot in the door at WTN. And so I bugged the hell out of the program director for a year. Give me a chance. Give me a chance. I promise I'll make it worth your while. Give me a chance. And so finally, a producer got sick and they didn't have a backup producer. And so they said, all right, Pam, here's your chance. Because I listened to the show every day, so I knew exactly how it worked, right? And I could run a board easy. So that's how I got my start. And so they let me produce one day. And so I was the permanent backup producer. And then, unfortunately, Daryl and Carla got fired. And so the next thing you know, I'm producing the next morning show permanently. And that was the Steve Gill Show as producer. And then I left. I went to New York City and met Sean Hannity and kind of really got the bug and wanted my own show. And so after that, I quit that and went to WLAC for a while. That's where I met Phil Valentine and Johnny B. And so we all became friends. And then I left there and became an assignment editor at Channel 4. And then left there and moved to Illinois and got my own show there. And the rest, I was gone from Nashville for about 10 years and just kind of worked my way up. And now I'm back.
Wow, that's a great story.
About 10 years, yeah.
Steve Gill has been on this show and he's coming back to do a Phil Valentine tribute with me. So,
you got Steve doing the Phil Valentine tribute. Okay, cool.
Yeah. I do find it funny. You just talked about a lot of interaction with the radio. Do you find it funny that the late night comedy shows have to cancel right now during this writer's strike because most guys like Kimmel and Colbert have like 20 writers on staff, but they aren't funny. Comedians should write their own material. Do you write your own material?
I've never Well, I mean, I don't know that I even write it. It all comes from up here.
Yeah,
So,
improv
but
all day. Yeah.
yeah, of course, yeah. And I would say Kimmel's probably a little quicker on the take, if you will, because he has done radio before. I think you find the more successful people like that have done radio before. But do I find it funny? I don't. I haven't watched late night television in quite some time. So, I think my joke today or yesterday was, the writers are going on strike. Is anybody going to notice? Because who's watching the shows? I
That's
mean,
Saturday Night Live, no.
I don't have friends that watch those shows. And, you talk to millennials or Gen Zs, they're not watching those shows. So if I'm watching Saturday Night Live, I'm actually not watching it live. I'm watching the highlights that you get on socials on Sunday morning. If it was a controversial monologue or if there was some skit that just was off the charts funny, that's I'm not watching it live and haven't for a long time. So, I find it unfortunate that those writers are now, not working. That I don't like. And I feel their pain because writers in Nashville, songwriters, have been getting the shaft for years. So these writers are also getting, have been getting the shaft. It's that is very true. But Kimmel and those guys, I agree. They should be able to write their own stuff. They can't.
No, because they're not really comedians. They're just talking heads that with a comedy show as opposed to a news show. It used to be that little side skit that Dennis Miller did, but they blew it up into 17 different shows. But it's good for radio and it's good for podcasts if they're out of the public eye for a few minutes, something to distract us. Last year, the Mighty 990 in Memphis announced that you, Pamela Furr, will join its staff as a freelance anchor after spending the last 8 years at SuperTalk 99.7 WTN. Memphis is a whole different animal, I'm learning, the more I'm here. It is the crime capital of the country, 20 crimes per 1,000 people. We just had Justin Pearson in the capital, making a name for himself as an anti-gun Democrat after being expelled and then reinstated immediately. What do you make of Memphis?
I wouldn't want to go there after dark. That's what I make of Memphis. No, seriously speaking, I by the way, I have taken a little hiatus from KWAM, but KWAM is a great station. Todd Starnes is a great individual, and every day if I wanted to, my first four stories in a newscast would be shooting at a gas station. Meanwhile, shooting at a grocery store. Meanwhile, shooting at a, you know what I mean? So, it is not a safe place these days. And what you have is a DA that's si soft on crime. I mean, they allow people, once they're arrested, if they don't have money to pay their bond, okay, that's all right. We'll let you go. Just be sure to come back to court. You know what I mean? Just be sure to be here when we tell you to be here. And then they don't come back to court. So or while they're out on probation that they didn't have to put any money toward, they end up shooting somebody else, or somebody else gets raped or attacked or robbed or carjacked or whatever the case may be. So you have a soft on crime DA, so that leaves your police force completely frustrated because all the work they do is for nothing. So it's a bad situation in Memphis. And Justin Pearson knows that. And instead of working on making a name for yourself, you ought to try to, I don't know, do something for your district and your constituency who's suffering every day because you don't know if the next day when you fill up your car with gas, if you're going to get shot.
What do we
That's
know about that?
my opinion on Memphis. Good people in Memphis, though. Look, and there's Graceland and there's great barbecue and there's incredible music in Memphis. And there's, like I said, just some incredible people there. But you've also got a lot of people who can't sleep at night because they're not sure what's going to happen the next day.
They're held hostage to their own soft on crime lawmakers. And they have the new chief of police that came from Atlanta who got kind of bounced out of there to clean it up, but isn't really doing a good job. Let me read this quote. Pam, he called you Pam. Pam is one of the top radio broadcasters in the country, and we're honored to introduce her to the Mid-South, said KWAM owner Todd Starnes. For those that don't know, Starnes is the recipient of an Edward R. Murrow Award and the Associated Press Mark Twain Award for storytelling. What's he like?
Oh, my goodness. That's the sweetest man in the world. Yeah, no, I've known Todd for a very long time. Todd came from Fox News, and so I've known Todd for a long time. So it's been a pleasure, you know, to work with him and to help him build his radio station. And I hope to get to work with him again. We'll see. I've been working a lot on WTN these days, so I've had to kind of say, Todd, I need a moment, and let's get some of this other stuff done that I need to get done, and then we'll figure out how I can be a part of his group again. Mm-hmm. But he's got great people there. Ben Dieter is a great young man who loves news and he loves radio. So you've got a good broadcaster there. And the rest of the team that Todd has. No, Todd's a great, great guy. And he deserves that award. He is really good at storytelling. Very much so.
And a very devout Christian. And Glenn Beck has now come out on record to say that Rupert Murdoch called him into his office and said, stop saying God. And he said, no, and did. And then Rupert called him in again and said, do you know how many times you said it? And he said, you counted? And he said, yeah, 91. You're fired. And now we hear that Tucker Carlson may have had something that he said at Heritage that finally was the straw that broke the camel's back at Fox. Is your experience at Fox is kind of anti-Christian religion over there?
No, and I think that's a bunch of malarkey on the Tucker Carlson side. There were other things at play there. Okay. I'm in a different role when I have freelanced for Fox. Now I haven't done a story for Fox in a little bit. Right now I'm doing Westwood One stories, but from a reporter standpoint, you know, I'm reporting stories, so I'm not inserting my beliefs or I'm supposed to keep my agenda out of it, right? And my bias out of it. So that doesn't apply to me. I wasn't a talking head for Fox. So I don't know that I can answer that. I've never been told, you know, stop talking about God in any capacity, from a news standpoint, or filling in or anything like that. You know, if somebody said that to me, I would go, okay. And I'd still talk about God, you know, but at the same time, I don't think news radio is the place to preach at you. You know, if I'm going to tell you what I believe, that's one thing. But if I'm going to tell you, you need to believe the same way, then that needs to be saved for another radio format. Does that make sense?
Yeah, journalism versus opinion radio.
Opinion radio, it's okay to say, well, this is where I am and this is what I believe. But if I say you have to believe the same way, I don't think news talk radio is for that. That's for Sunday, in my opinion.
I agree. Last week we had Dan Mandis on, and how do you like working for him at WTN?
I've been working with him for about 9 years now. I think it's been 9 years. Dan is a lot of fun. Dan has become a really dear friend, and Dan has done very well for himself. When a lot of people didn't think that he would make it here, he showed them all that they were wrong. Yeah,
he said nice things about you too. How about Matt Murphy and Brian Wilson? Do you get to interact
Matt
with
Murphy's
those guys?
Crazy, he's crazy. No, Matt Murphy's great. So he brought a new energy, I would say, to WTN after, you know, which was really difficult. I would say after the death of Phil Valentine, that he didn't you know fill in for his time slot. But when we're all mourning, right, and we're all, I mean, that's one of the reasons why I kind of took a step back from WTN, because, you know, I was really, that hit me hard, harder than I think people realized, I think harder than I realized. And so Matt coming in with the personality that he has really brought new life to everyone. And if you tell him I said that, I don't want his head to get too big.
He actually listens to this show. Before he was a guest, he was a listener, so he'll hear you.
So he'll hear it. All right, Matt, don't take
it back.
Don't get the big head. But no, seriously, brought new energy, new life. He's crazy. He's a lot of fun, but he's passionate about what he believes and digs really hard for details on stories. Nashville's really lucky to have him here.
Who was the one I haven't had? Brian Wilson.
Boy, what a career that man has had. He has worked with some of the best. He's been in some places that on 9/11, he's right there in front of the Capitol as they're all evacuating the building. He has those kind of stories to tell. What a career he's had, and it's been a pleasure getting to know him. I think it's been four or five years now. It's been a pleasure getting to know him, and he just got married not too very long ago, and so getting to know his wife as well. So he's been a real asset to the community as well.
It sounds like a real family. Whatever happened to Michael Del Giorno, who left in March?
And Michael Del Giorno is no longer with the company.
Okay.
That's all I can say.
That's right. That's what I understand. Legal reasons and all the rest. So due to COVID, you and the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame hosted one big event in 2021 for both the class of 2020 and the class of 2021. Was that a good show? And what did COVID do to, Nashville venues? I ask because it nearly drove the Seattle ones, where I was at the time, out of business. If it was not for Steve Severin of Nemo's putting together a coalition to lobby government to get a bailout for venues, it would be all over. What is, from your perspective, how did the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame handle all that?
Yeah, so, I'm president of that organization. We are a charity, all of that. And so I've been president for 4 years now, I think going on five, and we took a big hit when we couldn't do the ceremony in 2020. So because that's our big fundraiser also. So as a charity, that we took a big hit. When we wanted to put this together in 21, to do both classes, so it was going to be a bit much bigger ceremony, things were back open, but not open completely. And people were still a little, you have to understand, with the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame, you're talking about older people. So whereas for you and I, although I had COVID really badly, I thought I was going to die. Not joking. You're talking about a crowd that are 60s, 70s, and 80s in some cases, some of our inductees and their family members. So we had to be a little bit more careful, because even if COVID doesn't affect you and I as badly, it could kill, the flu could kill an 80-year-old. You know what I mean? So yeah, we have to be a little bit more conscious of that, a little bit more careful than you would say, just a political rally or something, or a concert or what have you. So, we took all of that into consideration and kind of put the feelers out, and everybody said, no, let's go ahead and have it again, because we almost didn't. And so we went ahead and did it. We gave people the option. If you want to wear masks, wear them. If that's what makes you feel comfortable, fine. We had an inductee that year. She suffers from lupus, so getting COVID for her could be deadly. We took precautions and made sure tables were, I know it sounds silly, but we had to go through the motions of making sure tables had a certain distance and, all of that, just to be compliant with gatherings and whatnot. But we had to jump through the hoops. We didn't have a choice. But we did. And so we were able to have our event. It ended up being great because, people had not been to anything you know, that side. I think we had about 400 people that particular year. Normally we have two. So for about 400 people. And it was great because a lot of people had not been out of the house for anything in a while. And so we, I mean, we, nobody wanted to leave. Everybody wanted to stay and tell more radio stories. So it ended up being a really, really great night and very emotional for a lot of people. Cause again, you know, a lot of us had not been out of the house in a while.
Yeah, I thought that would be a good story. And at that, you changed the name of the Luther Award to the Luther Community Service Award, named for Chattanooga radio legend Luther Massengill, who spent more than 70 years waking up residents of Chattanooga and Southeast Tennessee on legendary station WDEF. Who won that award that year? That event?
You're asking me a question I'd have to look up.
Oh, okay.
yeah, you might have the information yourself right there. Because each year it's different. Each year we just renamed the award, but at the Luther Award we've been doing for several years now. We just renamed it the Community Service Award because a lot of people, let's say in West Tennessee, may not know who Luther Massengill is. In East Tennessee they do, but you know, Middle Tennessee may not have known who he was. So that's why we decided to change it to the Luther Community Service Award. That way you would know what it was exactly for and what it was about. So that's why we renamed it. But, you know, we've had Lightning 100 in Nashville's been a winner of that. I want to say that year it may have been, doing this from memory here, WCLE out of Cleveland, I think, may have been the recipient that particular year. Last year, it was somebody in Morristown, and I don't remember the call letters, who got it last year. And, I mean, any radio station is eligible for it every year. You can win it multiple times a year, each, you know, in a row. But it's for radio stations who are really involved in the community and do things for their particular community, whether that's fun, you know, Second Harvest Food Bank, some do Meals on Wheels things, some do things for veterans. I know in Nashville, WTN does the Nashville Rescue Mission fundraiser every year. So it's just radio stations who are involved in their community here in Tennessee. But what I'm just talking.
Go for it. Yeah. This is
what
your
I love
show.
About the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame and what I love about the history of Tennessee radio is that we can boast things that other states cannot. For instance, where was country music created? Now, you might think it was Nashville. It was not. It was Bristol, Tennessee, Bristol, Virginia, on a radio station in Bristol, right? Where was rock and roll created? When did we first hear rock and roll? That was Memphis on a Memphis radio station. If you're talking about Black music, play, you know, R&B, blues, whatever, played on a radio station for the first time, where was it? Nashville, Tennessee, WLAC, years and years ago, 40s and 50s, right? So that's where that industry was created. So Tennessee radio creates industries. Dolly Parton, wouldn't you say, is an industry all to herself?
Yes.
Where was she created? I mean, obviously her parents created her and she had a guitar where she created her music. But where did she get her start? Knoxville radio stations. So, you know, she would go to remotes. I've got video of it. You know, she's a teenager with her guitar and her band. And she would go to, you know, remotes at a car dealership for a radio station, you know, that sort of thing. So, I mean, I can go on and on and on down the list of you know, the longest airing radio show. Where? Nashville, Tennessee. It's the Grand Ole Opry. It's the longest radio show in history. No other radio show has been on that long. It's about to celebrate its 100th anniversary. So anyway, so that's what I love about Tennessee, that we can boast things like that that no other state can. And that's why I'm proud to be a part of the Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame.
That's awesome. All right. Well, we got about 5 minutes left and yep. I always run out of, I have more questions than time, unfortunately. But let's see. You were a Christian songwriter. Mm-hmm. Do you remember the first Christian song you wrote, and did it stem from a personal experience?
I don't remember the first Christian song I wrote, but I do remember the first Christian song that but I got cut. How's that? That
Okay.
was recorded. And that was a song called Hope for the Hopeless that a group named Jeff and Sherry Easter recorded. And, you know, it was probably, I don't know, I think I was really young. And so some guy probably broke my heart and I was just depressed. You know, so there's a line in there, the tears on my pillow, you know, don't ease the pain. I've got nothing to lose here and nothing to gain. You know, it's probably a heartbreak. I'm not going to lie. But then you take the spiritual route and it just says, you know, but there's hope for the hopeless. There's life for the lost. Held only, you know, from the blood shed on that old rugged cross. There's light in the darkness that leads to the place where there's hope for the hopeless and his saving grace. All came from a dude that broke my heart.
There
you go. There you go.
Well, you were very generous to talk about charities and awards that have been given to other radio stations, but you have Tennessee Not Forgotten Foundation and the annual Bourbon Bash here in Leaper's Fork. You want to tell us about that?
Is that where you live? Is that where you are? You said here.
Very close. Frankly.
Ah, very nice. Yeah. So, again, all this stems from Pamela's broken heart. You know, I used to date a guy in the military in the National Guard, and he and I used to talk about and dream about, you know, ways that we could help people who come back from Iraq and Afghanistan and that sort of thing. And, you know, I ended up seeing one of his soldiers. He was commanding officer of a guy who's now a bourbon expert. And so I saw him on TV going, well, that's Fred Minnick. What in the world is he doing on TV? I knew him when I dated so-and-so. And so I just picked up the phone and called Fred, and he said, yeah, now I'm doing, I'm a bourbon reviewer, if you will. And I said, well, you need to come to Nashville. Let's raise some money. And that's how the Bourbon Bash was started. And we're very proud of it. I've never lost any money at all on this event. And we always seem to double how much money we're able to give to charities, which is excellent. And so last year we raised right at $100,000. And our charity last year was the Gary Sinise Foundation, who have moved their headquarters to the Franklin area.
Yep.
That was our way of saying, welcome to Middle Tennessee. We want to help you. We want to raise some money for you. Yeah. So we did that last year. And our Bourbon Bash will be again this year, November the 11th. Mark it down. It's Veterans Day this year. And this time we're going to move it indoors. We are going to have it at Liberty Hall there in Franklin at the factory this year. But November the 11th, mark it on your calendar.
I will be there for sure.
If you love bourbon and if you love the military.
All right. And then the other one is the Advisory Board for Blood Assurance. Is there a shortage of blood in Middle Tennessee?
There always seems to be a shortage. What I love, though, about Blood Assurance, as opposed to other blood banks, if you will, Blood Assurance, the blood that you donate stays in Middle Tennessee. So if you are, or in Tennessee. So if you are a donor for any Blood Assurance at, you know, their blood drives or what have you, they don't send it to California, even though, I mean, there's nothing wrong with that. Red Cross or other organizations, they do good work, but the blood you donate may not stay here. It may go to California or, you know, whatever other emergency.
They drink it there, whereas here we have bourbon. So yes, I totally get where you're coming from. A few seconds left. If you were asked by a young person today about getting into radio, especially a young lady, what would you advise them to do to get started?
Oh, wow. Well, first, listen to a lot of radio, listen to other women that are on radio. I would tell them not to expect a lot of money. You don't necessarily make a lot of money. You know, there's no happy medium. You're either making great money and or you're making terrible money and you have to have side hustles or what have you. Most people, though, I have to be honest with you, most young people today don't want to get into radio. They want to do podcasts. So this is my advice. And I've had young people come through different classes from David Lipscomb and others come through and ask questions. And my answer to them is, if you want to do a great podcast, listen to a great radio station and take every cue that they do and use it for your podcast. Because there's a reason why people listen to radio. There's lots of tricks of the trade. You know, you get to your point quick, you get to, you know, all of these things, you tease, you, I can go on and on. There's all these things that you do that you don't want, and be entertaining. Don't be boring if you're doing talk, and if you're doing a podcast. So that's my advice. If you want to do podcasts, go right ahead, but you're going to need to listen to great radio if you want to be different than everybody else.
That is good advice. Okay, last one. There are so many entertainment options out there now with the one click, the iPhone and iTunes and Spotify, you know, music, just, you just said podcast, streaming services to compete with the time that people have to listen to things. And of course, commercial free. What do you think the future of radio will be?
Wow. All right. That's a very good one. Again, if you, radio is still strong. Some people don't think it is, but it is still strong. There are, you know, people are still listening, especially if you are local and you have local people on, you know, when something happens locally, what are you going to do? You're going to turn on your radio because you need to hear what's happening, right? Whether it's a tornado or that school shooting that happened, which was a horrible thing. You're listening to radio. So where is it going to be in 10 years? I don't know. I mean, I'll tell you what terrifies me is AI. And when you see all the stories that, you know, a DJ could be AI. Of course, there are some DJs that already sound like they're AI. I am not naming names. But, I mean, seriously. So, again, I think as long as you are continue to be entertaining, as long as you continue to be involved in your community, as long as you continue to be relevant, whether it's talk radio or music radio, I think you're going to be fine for a while. I think you are. You still have that platform where people can find you. You just have to find that way to remind them how to get to you. In all the noise, what rises to the top is always the most entertaining and informative and friendly, and, you know, always, whether it's a podcast, radio, TV show, newspaper column, whatever, that's the deal.
That's right. And to be able to hear a voice like yours that's comforting during the time of COVID, or when Phil Valentine was sick, or when the bombing blew up that building at Christmas Eve in Nashville, or the shooting at Covenant High School, whatever the case may be, a Covenant school, whatever the case may be. It is nice to know that there's a human being on the air that cares about their community. You might see them at a bourbon event, a charity, as opposed to somebody's typing it up in China and it's being distributed everywhere all the time and nothing. Well, Pamela, thank you for your time. I really appreciate you coming on here. We are at the end. Please tell our listeners where they can go to find out more about you, follow your social media, anything else you got coming up.
Sure. So my last name is spelled F-U-R-R. And so you can find me on Facebook. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. I have a Snapchat account. I only use it for the filters. Let's see, what else? What else is out there? I'm not on TikTok, but you can find me there. You can always email me, PamelaFurr@hotmail.com. I don't have a website, but I do have two charities that if you feel so led, you're more than welcome to donate to. You can find us at Tennessee Radio Hall of Fame or the Bourbon Bash. And again, all that you can find on socials. Thank you for the opportunity to say that too.
And thanks for coming on with us. Have a great day.
Thank you.
Harvey Durham Health Insurance Agency is the trusted, independent health insurance agency that you can depend on for all your health insurance coverage needs. Over 30 years of insurance experience behind every policy. He's great because he doesn't look at health insurance as sales. He looks at it as helping people and doing the best he can to solve your current long-term care, disability, and Medicare supplement needs, even pets. I know, I'm a client, and so is my lab, Caroline. Give Harvey a call at 731-727-9242 or email him at harveydurham@harveydurham.com and tell him Steve and Steve at Mill Creek View sent ya. I don't understand how you ever did without me. I don't understand how I bring you down to your knees. Welcome to the Steve and Steve segment of our show, where we cover what we just heard. Producer Steve, what'd you think of our guest, Pamela, not Pam, Burr?
I enjoyed Pamela, and whenever you have, people don't know this, but when we, in between our segments, there's some off-air time, and whenever you get the radio personalities, I start spinning around because I love radio. And so the three of us start talking, and we got some ideas for a show coming up off that interview. So, and a guest, so that's really good. So really, really enjoyed her.
Being a producer for 30 years, she had some great ideas. Absolutely. You're a producer, Steve. Either things are getting crazier day by the day, or Twitter is getting better at finding videos that I need to share with folks. It's really amazing. Let's kick it off with another good American boy, brave enough to speak up when he sees a wrong. I'm going to really test your clip playing skills today, Steve, with 10, but all important. So check this out.
Grade at Nichols Middle School. I appreciate the opportunity to speak to you today. I never thought that the shirt I wore to school on March 21st would lead me to speak with you today. On that Tuesday morning, I was taken out of gym class to sit down with two adults for what turned out to be a very uncomfortable talk. I was told that people were complaining about the words on my shirt, that my shirt was making some students feel unsafe. Yes, words on a shirt made people feel unsafe. They told me that I wasn't in trouble, but it sure felt like I was. I was told that I would need to remove my shirt before I could return to class. When I nicely told them that I didn't want to do that, they called my father. Thankfully, my dad supported my decisions and came to pick me up. What did my shirt say? Five simple words. There are only two genders. Nothing harmful, nothing threatening. Just a statement I believe to be a fact. I have been told that my shirt was targeting a protected class. Who is this protected class? Are their feelings more important than my rights? I don't complain when I see pride flags and diversity posters hung throughout the school. Do you know why? Because others have a right to their beliefs just as I do. Not one person, staff, or student told me that they were bothered by what I was wearing. Actually, just the opposite. Several kids told me that they supported my actions and that they wanted one too. I was told that the shirt was a disruption to learning. No one got up and stormed out of class. No one burst into tears. I'm sure I would have noticed if they had. I experience disruptions to my learning every day. Kids acting out in class are a disruption, yet nothing is done. Why do the rules apply to one, yet not another? I feel like these adults were telling me that it wasn't okay for me to have an opposing view. Their arguments were weak, in my opinion. I didn't go to school that day to hurt feelings or cause trouble. I have learned a lot from this experience. I learned that a lot of other students share my view. I learned that adults don't always do the right thing or make the right decisions. I know that I have a right to wear a shirt with those five words. Even at 12 years old, I have my own political opinions, and I have a right to express those opinions. Even at school, this right is called the First Amendment to the Constitution.
Yeah, boy.
My hope in being here tonight is to bring the school committee's attention to this issue. I hope that you will speak up for the rest of us so we can express ourselves without being pulled out of class. Next time, it may not only be me. There might be more students that decide to speak out. Thank you for your time and good night.
You know, I just want to mention that my son was really into knives and guns and stuff, and he had some sweatshirts and T-shirts that had some just pictures of that kind of thing, Steve. And he got pulled into the principal's offices in high school and got taken down, and I came to his defense, and then he got expelled for carrying a chain that was actually he made out of pop can tabs, and he had gotten, you know, and so school systems have been doing this kind of crap for a long time.
Yeah. Well, that was a 12-year-old in Middleborough, Massachusetts, who wore a shirt that said there are only two genders, and he destroyed the school board. So good for him. Nice, right?
Yes.
Guys like that, guys like your son, the future has hope. Let's hear from a good man. The new Marvel movie coming out, Guardians of the Galaxy. May as well give him a little promo here, but let's remember, not all actors are woke idiots. Let's hear this.
That wants the best for you. Believe that. I do. Learn to pray. It's easy, and it's so good for your soul. Nobody is perfect. People are going to tell you you're perfect just the way you are. You're not. You are imperfect. You always will be, but there is a powerful force that designed you that way. And if you're willing to accept that, you will have grace. And grace is a gift. And like the freedom that we enjoy in this country, that grace was paid for with somebody else's blood. Do not forget it. Don't take it for granted. God bless you. Please get home safely.
That was Chris Pratt, a.k.a. Star-Lord. We'll see if he continues to get work at Disney after that. There are a few good journalists left on TV, not many, but here is probably the best woman standing, Maria Bartiromo. I remember her when she was the money honey on CNBC in its early days, pre-Kramer. What happens when a Democrat is confronted by a real journalist with nowhere to run? Check this out, real journalism.
Michigan, Debbie Dingell. Thanks so much for joining us. Really appreciate it.
It's good to be with you. So I want to say this. I'm really proud to call Joe Biden my friend. I think Joe Biden is working hard and delivering, and that we've gotten a whole lot more done than some previous presidents have.
Hope you'll come back. Really appreciate it. Congresswoman Debbie Dingell, great to talk to you as always. Appreciate
it. That's how you don't do it.
Do you agree that we are in recession or will be within 6 months?
Well, I'm hoping that they're wrong. I think that the president is doing everything that he can.
What, $5 trillion?
But go look at what the money was spent on. We're spending that money on vaccines, and I'm tired of people saying
it wasn't on vaccines. You're talking about $1.9 trillion COVID relief package, spending that had nothing to do with COVID. You know that, Congresswoman. We're talking about 40-year high inflation right now. It's cutting into profits. It's cutting into people's lives. They can't even go paycheck to paycheck. 75% of the country says we're going in the wrong direction, which is a major problem for this economy.
Well, first of all, you know, I go to the gas station and I go to the grocery store too, and we've got to do something, but I'm not going to apologize for trying to fix our roads because our infrastructure is...
The roads are not being fixed. The money is misallocated. And then there's a wide open border. Colored fentanyl is being used to target children. What are you going to do about the fentanyl poisoning in this country? Now we have to worry about Halloween because of this wide open border. Have you spoken to Joe Biden about it?
Yes, I've talked to the president about it because I am really worried.
What is his answer? What is his answer for the 100,000 people who have been poisoned by fentanyl? What is his answer for the 3 million people who are in this country on his watch illegally? What did he say to you?
Okay, Marie, can we go like calmly? I didn't talk to him about immigration directly.
So you haven't spoken to him about the border?
Fentanyl and drugs have been around a long time. My father...
Fentanyl trafficking has accelerated substantially on Joe Biden's watch. We know this, and you know this.
Steve, you're going to have to take lessons from this gal when you're really hitting somebody hard.
I know. That's how you do it if you're a legend. I mean, you got to have your receipts, but she left her stammering. Okay. 27 Democrats in the Colorado House of Reps just voted against making indecent exposure to minors a class six felony. One Democrat said that the bill targets drag shows and the transgender community. Listen to this.
These types of laws have been used to ban drag shows, to target individuals who use the restroom of the sex that they identify with, a public restroom, to charge them with felony charges. I am very concerned about the attacks against the transgender community that are happening across the country. When I initially read this bill, it did not even come to mind, for me either, as an advocate. But as I've looked at the bills and as I've talked to my colleagues who are fighting these types of bills across the country, it's very clear to me that the language is very much mirrored in some of the laws that have been used to target members of our community because of who they are.
Well, we may be past the point of no return, past sin and now into demonic. Who can be against making indecent exposure to minors illegal? Only demons. I could pay the clip of the Nebraska legislature crying in joy for passing legal abortion, but it's not a soundbite for audio. So, you know, you have to search for it yourself. It's gross.
It is.
Moving right along. I got a call the other day from Dr. Anthony Fauci. He told me to check the record on his statement. Just kidding. He didn't call me, but he did tell us all publicly to check. Well, here you go, buddy. Clip number 5.
You know, the tail of the tape, when I kept on saying over and over again, we've got to get the children back to school. we have to start implementing both containment and mitigation. And what was done when you do closing the school is mitigation.
If you have a situation in which you don't have a real good control over an outbreak and you allow children to gather together, they likely will get infected. And if they get infected, the likelihood that they will bring the infection home. So that really is a risk.
And we don't know everything about this virus. And we really better be very careful, particularly when it comes to children.
You can't treat all schools the same because they're in different phases of the outbreak. It depends on where you are. There may be some areas that the level of virus is so high that it would not be prudent to bring the children back to school.
Are we looking at, frankly, many months of virtual learning?
In some places, Judy, that may be the case.
You can't make one statement about bringing children back to school in this country. It depends on where you are.
So if you want your schools to open, get your community level down.
When you get into the yellow zone and in the red zone, it becomes different. You have to do certain mitigations.
And he really wants to and believes that the schools need to reopen in the next 100 days, essentially all the K-8 schools within 100 days. That's the goal. That may not happen.
The schools really do need more resources, and that's the reason why the National Relief Act that we're talking about getting passed, we need that.
Steve, if you come into my office right now, I am got a cold, so I guess the virus is really heavy here, real dense, so you might want to protect yourself.
They're going to bring the hazmat suits out pretty sure, but sorry, Dr. Fauci, the internet is forever, and you did not want schools opened. And in the Washington Post, where they still say democracy dies in darkness or from a vaccine, Moderna's billionaire CEO reaped nearly $400 million last year. He also got a raise. Lovely. Vaccine maker faces pushback over executive pay as CEO pledges to donate proceeds of stock sale to charity, by Daniel Gilbert. Which charity? Bill Gates Foundation? Fauci School of Eugenics? Planned Parenthood? We'll see. Speaking of internet forever records, my favorite childhood teacher is trying to make the rounds pleading for amnesty also, which I will never forgive. What could you possibly have to say, Mrs. Weingarten? What's your number six? Okay, you can stop that. That is a picture of her being insane, but of course, yes. This is an audio show, not a video show, so it doesn't matter. So let's play clip number seven.
Here we go.
Many people who got really, really sick, and Black and brown folks got more sick than white folks. We had members die in New York City. We had many people who got really, really sick, and Black and brown folks got more sick than white folks.
So good you had to play it twice, but that's the American Federation of Teachers president apparently claiming the COVID-19 virus itself was racist. AFT president said Black and brown folks got more sick than white folks. How did it know? I don't know. Last one, number eight.
In school, we need to actually get back to in-person learning. I am a big believer that we have to reopen safely and carefully. If you hear the frustration in my voice,
mm-hmm, I do.
We put out a plan at the end of April. The teachers want it.
76% of teachers say they're in for going to school because teachers want to teach kids. They want to go back to school. Yeah. They know that it's important for kids.
We want schools to reopen. We know in-school learning is better than remote.
We've been trying to get kids back into school throughout the country, and we worked with New York City to do it.
Let's really try to figure out how to have in-school learning and how to make it safe. This is how do we make sure that in-school learning happens, because we know how important it is.
The teachers of this country understand that in-person education is really important.
Teachers would have told you pre-pandemic that remote education is not a substitute. We already have 18 of 20 of the largest school districts that are open for in-person learning. My union has been trying to reopen schools since last April. They want to be in school. They know that that's important. Teachers want to be back with kids. And in the districts that I represent, it's about 95% of those districts are now reopened for in-person learning. All of that is really great news.
We want school to reopen everywhere this fall in person.
I'm a big believer that we have to have in-school learning.
The bottom line, Martha, is it's time for our kids to be back in school. Anyone who knows educators in America know that we want to be in school. It's full speed ahead for the fall.
We were the first ones to put a report out about how to get back to in-school learning. I mean, teachers do want what kids need. I'm all in for...
Never ends, Steve.
So that was what the AFT put out with all of the clips of her saying that she was all in on schools reopening. But Republicans on the House COVID subcommittee want you to think, I wanted to keep schools closed. Here's what I actually said over and over again. I won't let Randy Weingarten attempt to rewrite history. Listen to this in a second, but this will be the last one. I'm not the only guy on earth that can't stomach Randy. Listen, this is CNN contributor of all places. Scott Jennings went off on American Federation of Teachers President Randy Weingarten to her face late Thursday about her lack of remorse over COVID-19 school closures. Clip 9.
We don't know each other, but speaking on behalf of millions of American parents, I have 4 at home. I had to teach them at home. My wife had to teach them at home. I am stunned at what you have said this week about your claiming to have wanted to reopen schools. I think you'll find that most parents believe you were the tip of the spear of school closures. There are numerous statements you made over the summer of 20 scaring people to death about the possibility of opening schools. And I hear no remorse whatsoever about the generational damage that's been done to these kids. I have 2 kids with learning differences. Do you know how hard it is for them to learn at home and not in a classroom that was designed for them? And for you to sit in front of Congress and the American people and say, oh, I wanted to open them the whole time. I am shocked. I'm stunned. And there are millions of parents who feel the exact same way.
But the clip said that she wanted to open it up, Steve, right?
I know, but I hear no remorse. Weingarten testified before the Select Subcommittee on the Coronavirus Pandemic on Wednesday to address her union's role in school closures. She had been a leading voice in school closures during the height of the pandemic, telling the public in 2021 that millions of children would die if Republican Florida Governor Ron DeSantis reopened schools. Weingarten revealed at the hearing that President Joe Biden's transition team reached out to Weingarten's union to coordinate about school openings. The union also reportedly worked with the Center for Disease Control and Prevention, CDC, to address reopening schools, which Weingarten has denied. Used to be a felony to lie to Congress. They really should bring that back. Here's a headline. Randy Weingarten is an evil liar. David Strom, April 27th, 2023, hotair.com. Does the headline sound harsh? It is accurate on both counts. Randy Weingarten has been and remains an advocate for evil policies and is indeed a provable liar. She, despite being neither a doctor nor a teacher, helped the CDC develop draconian guidelines that kept schools closed for months and in some cases more than a year. And there is a direct correlation between the level of influence unions have in a school district and the length of those school closures. It was indisputable that she was one of the single biggest factors in having schools closed, keeping them closed, and the attacks on those who wanted schools reopened. She was one of the most powerful and loudest voices for keeping kids out of the classroom. She literally could call the director of the CDC at a moment's notice and did. She helped write the school closure guidelines and make them much more draconian than almost any other countries. Now, though, she has joined the Fauci Brigade, people whose memories get clouded and whose recollection is that they were on the side of the angels, desperately trying to keep the country open as others recklessly shut things down. They were desperate to keep people, but helpless to stop the insanity. They were desperate to help people, but helpless to stop the insanity. Weingarten literally said that as a 65-year-old, she can't remember as she used to. Question, when was the first time you engaged with CDC? Randy Weingarten, look, I'm 65 years old. I don't remember everything anymore. Well, I, for one, remember. I worry that many people won't, though, because they are blinded both by ideology and by the desire to believe the liberals actually care for their well-being. They don't. Al Shanker, a former president of the AFT, was much more blunt about his role than Weingarten. His most famous quote, And the reason why he is remembered decades after he left the union was crystal clear about his attitude. Quote, "When school children start paying union dues, that's when I'll start representing the interests of school children." Bingo. Stay tuned for my thoughts for the day.
Hey, it's Dan Mandis from Super Talk 99.7 WTN, and I appreciate being here on the Mill Creek View, Tennessee podcast.
Welcome to my quotes for the day, but before I share, I want to remind everyone to subscribe to Mill Creek View Podcast. Just go to Rumble or Spotify or iTunes and hit the subscribe button and follow us. And while you're there, leave a comment and I'll read it. Thanks for doing it. Once in his life, every man is entitled to fall madly in love with a gorgeous redhead, Lucille Ball. When redheaded people are above a certain social grade, their hair is auburn, Mark Twain. While the rest of the species is descended from apes, redheads are descended from cats. Also Mark Twain. There speaks the passion and the rebellion that go with red hair. My second wife had red hair. She was a beautiful woman and she loved me. Strange, is it not? I have always admired red-haired women. Your hair is very beautiful. There are other things I like about you, your spirit, your courage, the fact that you have a mind of your own. Mr. Aristides, Agatha Christie, destination unknown. I can't get that little red-haired girl out of my mind. Charlie Brown, Charles M. Schulz, The Complete Peanuts, Volume 14, 1977 to 1978. According to The Wire, you are resting well and are being taken care of by a nurse. I hope she is beautiful and that she has red hair. I don't know why, but whenever I dream of a nurse, she always has red hair. Red hair makes a man want to recover his health quickly so that he can get on his feet and get the nurse off hers. Groucho Marx, letter to his son. Groucho Marx, hello, nurse. Yakko and Wacko, Warner Brothers from The Animaniacs. She got canceled from the reboot. Sad. She gave them their catchphrase after all. Why in the world did you pull quotes on red hair, Steve? I don't know. Google or DuckDuckGo, Pamela Furr, and see for yourself why it occurred to me. That's it for this episode. Really hoped you liked it. Thank you, Pamela Furr. Until next time, this is your host, Steve Abramowitz, editor-in-chief of mcview.us. Peace in our time.
Any views or opinions represented on the podcast are personal and belong solely to the creator and do not represent those of people, institutions, or organizations that the creator may or may not be associated with in a professional or personal capacity unless explicitly stated.